For the week of October 17th, 2010, this is Showbiz Sandbox Episode 75, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news-making headlines around the entertainment world. Finally back in Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling-Reich.
And always in Los Angeles, I am Karen Woodward.
And in Brooklyn at the Rocky Sullivan's Pub, I'm Michael Giltz.
It's pretty quiet for a pub.
Well, celebrating my friend Nanette's birthday with tons of kids running around previously, but it's all calmed down now.
No wonder you went straight to the pub.
Well, and it's pretty quiet for a Sunday night. We're recording on Sunday because, Karen, you are off to a very special conference.
I'm going to go to the Geek Fest, known as Digital Hollywood.
What are the highlights?
Probably the highlightiest highlight is the Variety Summit, which is all day on Monday. I'm only going to have a chance to go to half of it, but it's about how Hollywood is reacting to digital technology and the different platforms and like transmedia storytelling and social media. Oh my God, I'm such a geek. I'm so excited.
Is it more about networking or is it about learning stuff?
Oh, I hate the networking. No, I'm really bad at that part. I like to just go and sit on all the panels and learn stuff.
Sperling, and you got just done with the conference.
Yes, I was at Show East in Orlando, which is why I'm not going to Digital Hollywood, because frankly, I actually need to spend a few days in the office. But while I was at Show East, which is a conference for movie theater owners and distributors and the vendors that service both of them, I was walking down, well, I know, service sounds, if that's what you're laughing
at. That sounds dirty.
Yes, it's not as dirty as that might sound. But I was walking down a hallway in the Marriott World Center in Orlando, Florida, and all of these distributors have their movie posters up, and there are, of course, now digital movie posters that show the trailer. And I'm walking past Sony's digital signage, and there is a trailer there playing for Inside Job, the documentary about the collapse of Wall Street in 2008. And I just decided to stop for some reason, and out of the corner of my eye, I see all of these critics' quotes flashing on the screen. And then finally, I see one that says, "The most important film in Cannes, Michael Giltz, Huffington Post."
Oh, all right.
After, I should say, the New York Times, Roger Ebert. I mean, you know, it's like all the big guns. And then, of course, you end with the big one. But you're wrong. It didn't say Michael Giltz, Huffington Post. It said Michael Glitz, Huffington Post.
Oh, no, it didn't.
Yeah. They got it right on the poster, but got it wrong in the trailer.
So it was some other guy.
Yeah, I didn't see that, though. I mean, to me, it flashed so quickly, it may as well have been Michael Giltz.
I still remember my first quote was for The Player, the Robert Altman's comeback film, and I loved the score in that movie, and I singled that out in a Premiere magazine in a tiny little column I wrote, and they pulled that out for the Oscar campaign and quoted me, Michael Giltz, Premiere magazine. I don't even know if I was on staff, and it's like it made it look like I was, you know, Premiere magazine talking. So that was fun, being in that For Your Consideration ad, and that was so many years ago.
Well, I'm just kind of upset that they didn't say Michael Giltz, Showbiz Sandbox.
That's right. They should have, but I didn't review it for them, so they couldn't.
That's right.
You know, when we start reviewing movies on our podcast, then that's when they can.
Good point. Well, we're not going to be reviewing movies this week, and we don't have a special guest this week because we are recording on Sunday and we didn't feel like bothering anybody and interrupting their weekend. But we will be talking about some movie news because there are some big movies with big names getting green lights and being put on the fast track. So we're going to tell you all about that. And if you've been keeping up with the news, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Over in television, we're going to be talking about some of the season's new shows and how they're faring, as well as talk about a few new shows that networks are working on for future seasons. And then when it comes to music, it appears that Billboard magazine and its Hot 100 chart and all of its charts may be losing their touch, or at least a few clients. We'll explain. Of course, we'll review the week's top entertainment headlines during Big Deal or Big Whoop, and we'll end with a little inside baseball. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz, not Michael Glitz, to fill
in. No, I'm going to start calling him Michael Glitz.
Yeah, well, he's going to fill us in on the weekend's box office.
All right, so the number one movie at the box office this weekend is, of course, Jackass 3D, which grossed an astonishing $50 million in its first weekend, setting a record for October, setting a record for Fridays in October when it grossed $21 million, and it blew every expectation out of the water. One more example of how tracking is just way off these days. How much did 3D add to it? I don't know. I was excited to see the movie. I have to wait until Tuesday, so I'm ashamed to say. I have to wait till my friend Pete comes up for the Yankee baseball to go see this movie. He wouldn't let me go see it over the weekend, so I feel cheated out of it. But I'm looking forward to seeing it on Tuesday, and a lot of people already have, obviously. Number two at $22 million is Red, a film starring Bruce Willis and Helen Mirren about retired assassin CIA people who come back to work. It's based on a graphic novel, and that had a nice solid opening. Number three is The Social Network, the movie about Facebook. That grossed $11 million, and it's at $63 million total. At number four is Secretariat, the Disney family horse movie, which grossed $9.5 million, and is at $27 million total. And at number five is Life as We Know It, grossed $9.2 million. It's at $28 million total. And then after that, you've got movies making $4 million or less. Legend of the Guardians, the animated Owl movie, The Town, the Ben Affleck film, My Soul to Take, Wes Craven's horror film, which is dropping fast, grossing $3.1 million and only at $11.9 million total. Easy A, the delightful high school comedy, which is at $52 million total. And Oliver Stone's Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, which is at about $47 million and about to drop out of the top 10. It's grossing $36 million overseas, so they may not lose their shirt, but it's certainly not the success that Wall Street was.
No, and I did finally see The Social Network, which I thought was okay, but didn't have it didn't have any redeemable characters in it. So, and maybe I went in with high expectations, but I saw a slew of movies at Show East.
Oh,
it's going to be a pretty good fall. I saw Tangled, the animated film from Disney, which is the Rapunzel story, which is kind of a return to like Beauty and the Beast. And
is it a musical?
Yes, it has some music. The music isn't as good, but the animation is fantastic. And so is the 3D, I might add.
Well, I find it really interesting that they had to change the story of Rapunzel, put a guy in it and call it something else.
Well, I think they're just jazzing it up, but the guy's always there, isn't he?
Well, I mean, Prince rescues her or something, but he's not.
Yeah, she has to let down
her
hair.
It's not the guy that's in this movie. It's somebody totally different in the book.
The fairy folk tales obviously have many variations, but I think it is always the standard is that she lets her hair down and the guy climbs up to rescue her. You know, maybe your mom read you a feminist version of Rapunzel as you grew up.
My mom, I never read me any of them. I had books on tape. I loved them.
What else did you get a sneak glimpse of, Sperling?
The next 3 days, which is Paul Haggis's next film, the director of Crash, and stars Russell Crowe and Elizabeth Banks. And it's a pretty good film, a little long, but it's a good little suspense thriller. And I would recommend that. I saw What's the Story, Morning Glory, which stars Rachel McAdams and Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton.
And?
That's the morning newscast show, sort of like behind the scenes at Good Morning America.
Yes. Right. And it's a good little film. Roger Mitchell, or is it Roger Michelle? I always forget. But the same guy who did Notting Hill directed that film, and it's solid. People really liked it.
Now, the question is not what did you like so much as what did the distributors think would be a big hit? What were they most excited or pleased or surprised by? Was it the battling newscaster movie or?
Well, I think that they're most excited about The Fighter, which stars Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale and Melissa Leo in biopic directed by David O. Russell, who did Three Kings and I Heart Huckabees. And that is a great film that has a lot of potential awards-wise, I believe. I wouldn't be shocked if Christian Bale won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for that.
Well, he's a sensational actor. That and True Grit are two of the big wild cards that are still to come out later this year. Did you see True Grit or a trailer or any footage of that?
No, and to answer your question directly, distributors don't bring films to Show East or Show West, which is now CinemaCon. They don't bring films to these conventions unless they screen well. The other film that screened very well was Due Date, from Todd Phillips, the director of The Hangover and Old School and a slew of other comedies. It starred Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis, and it was very funny. I mean, all the films I saw were really good.
So distributors must be thrilled.
Yeah.
Well, looking at Jackass, I'm sure they're wondering how much is due to 3D. I think it was just a goodwill buildup. I felt like they waited long enough from Jackass 2 to make people want to see the movies again. You know, it's about 10 years ago that the Jackass TV show debuted on MTV. And then they did two movies, which made a ton of money, $60, $70 million each. And I felt like they gave it enough of a rest that people really wanted to see it. And then throwing in the 3D gave it an extra sort of got to see that. They're going to, you know, kick themselves in the crotch, but it's going to be in 3D. So I thought that was a really smart thing. So it'll be interesting to see how that does long term. I'm sure it'll fall pretty fast. but it's already
made its
money back. It fell
from Friday to Saturday. It fell. So,
well, of course, yeah. But Hilary Swank, however, did not have a great weekend. Her new movie, Conviction, which is an Oscar hopeful. It's the story, the true story, I should say, of a woman whose brother gets thrown into prison, she thinks unfairly, and she goes to high school, college, and law school just so she can try and get him out of jail. And that opened on 11 screens to a pretty weak per screen average of $3,600. So that only grows to a total of about $36,000 over the weekend on 11 screens. So that's not looking very good for her. That definitely gives you no momentum whatsoever. And reviews were quite mixed, I would say.
It looks boring.
Yeah. And worldwide, Inception passed the $800 million mark thanks to a huge overseas. Overseas is getting not quite double, but it's very, very strong. It's over $500 million overseas. One little thing that I caught my eye as I was looking through all the box office grosses were the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies. You know, they're being made, they've all been made and released all over the world in their original Swedish. And now, of course, the U.S. is remaking them. And the first one did so well, I thought, wow, you know, maybe the U.S. remake is going to have a lot of competition. Just like the vampire movie Let Me In had a lot of competition from the critical acclaim for the first movie, Let the Right One In. But the path of the three movies has been precipitous. They really have not delivered commercially. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo made $102 million worldwide. And then the second movie in the trilogy has made $57 million worldwide. And the third movie in the trilogy, which I think is fairly played out overseas, has only made $27 million worldwide. So they've fallen almost 50% movie to movie. And that's really a sign, especially when it's one long story arc. You know, it's not like a sequel where they're just sort of redoing the same idea. This is meant to be seen, and like Twilight, they should have all done pretty well. So obviously audiences are not as happy with those movies as it originally looked like. However,
I think people don't like reading subtitles either.
No, well, you know, subtitle, yes, of course, the fact that it made $100 million is notable because it's a subtitled film, no question. But it was doing better in all other parts of the world where they don't have subtitles or they have dubbing. You know, the U.S. was not a big part of this movie's success. The first one only made $12 million in the U.S. So the big story is that in the rest of the world, which might have said, hey, we've already seen this movie done great, we're not so happy with it. And they're used to subtitles and dubbing. That's the way they see most movies. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
Well, I didn't go to see any movies this weekend, but I'm going to have to do what I'm going to start calling my Netflix queue review.
Oh, what
did
you say?
The Ghost Rider.
My condolences.
What? I loved it.
Which
the
one?
The Ghost Rider. That's the one. It's the Roman Polanski film with
Ewan
McGregor.
Ghost Rider. I thought you said Ghost Rider, which was the Nicolas Cage film.
Okay. Yeah, do you think I'm going to watch that movie?
Who knows?
This is the movie with Ewan McGregor about a guy who's ghostwriting a book for a former prime minister of England, yeah. Basically a Tony Blair character.
Yeah. You guys, put it in your queues. It is a good movie.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Well, this weekend I watched The Pacific, the HBO miniseries, which I have to say I was a little cold on after first two or three episodes, but it really built up a lot, and there's a very strong cast, and I found it quite moving at the end. It's another very solid miniseries like Band of Brothers.
Well, were you guys big fans of the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Yes, but I had to watch them with my brother who could explain to me what was happening.
You both were talking at the same time there. So I know, of course, Michael, you're a huge fan of it. As you've mentioned previously, Karen apparently can't understand him, but
I was trying to speak Elvish.
I get lost. I get confused.
There's a ring.
There's one ring and it rules them all. But
Well,
maybe the reason that you didn't understand them is because you never saw the first story in it was a trilogy of books, The Lord of the Rings, but it started
It was one book split up and published in three parts.
I knew he was going to correct me about that. Well, The Hobbit is the book that Tolkien wrote first, and it's kind of kicks off the story with Bilbo Baggins. And I really like that book. It finally has a green light with Peter Jackson confirmed now to direct the film. Of course, Peter Jackson directed the original trilogy of The Lord of the Rings for New Line. The holdup here has been, of course, MGM, which is facing bankruptcy and creditors and is in the process of being bought and sold again. But $30 million has already been spent, sets have already been built, and the agreement was worked out last week between MGM and Warner and New Line, and it looks like it's a go.
I was going to say, is this really a surprise? I mean, it's a guaranteed hit. They've already put all this money into it. Is this really a surprise?
It's not a surprise that it's happening, but it was delayed for quite a while, and we lost the director that they planned to make it with, so it could have happened again. So, I mean, it might have been another year or two before it happened. So, you know, it was getting down to the wire. Peter Jackson has a lot of projects, so it might have been delayed for 5 years, and then that would have thrown off, well, who plays Gandalf? Maybe Ian McKellen is too old, etc.
Maybe he's dead.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not a surprise that they're making it, but hey, it was already pushed back a couple times, and they lost their first director of choice, which I'm still kind of bummed about. But thank God Peter Jackson has taken over. I'm not quite sure why it's costing $400 million. I guess maybe the actors, the Hobbits, are getting more money.
I don't know, but you know, it's two films being shot back to back, so it's not going to be made into one film. It's going to be two. And it's going to be released, the first of them will be released December 19th, 2012, and the second sometime in December 2013. And the director that you're referencing, Michael, is Guillermo del Toro, of course. Yeah. We should tell our listeners.
Yes. And of course, we don't know where it's going to be filmed yet. I mean, they've built sets. They clearly want to shoot in New Zealand, but they still have all those union negotiations to work out that has not been settled yet. They might shoot it in Eastern Europe or somewhere else. Who knows? So we'll find that out.
Yeah, I find that all pretty interesting, actually.
Well, while Peter Jackson is jumping onto The Hobbit, we have somebody from MGM jumping out, and that's Mary Parent, who was the head of MGM. After 2 years, she said, "That's it, I'm out." I guess
so. She left, right? She was not pushed out because she's
no. She definitely left, I think.
Yeah, she's a very talented executive, so I would be very surprised if she was fired.
Yeah, I mean, she set up the Three Stooges movie. Of course, I think she did another James Bond.
Well, she didn't do them, but there were projects that she couldn't make happen because of all these financial problems.
Right.
She had all these projects ready to go, and they fell apart because of all these shenanigans.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are you guys looking forward to – I know, Michael, you're looking forward to The Hobbit, but are you looking forward to Cleopatra with Angelina Jolie?
Well, it's, you know, Cleopatra, for movie buffs, is one of the most famous film debacles of all time. When it was made with Elizabeth Taylor, it was the biggest flop of all time. It was just a huge, the most expensive movie ever made, a huge disaster, incredible offset turmoil, far more interesting than the movie itself. So the idea of James Cameron tackling it when he keeps making the biggest budgeted movies of all time, it just makes you tingle to think of what might happen. Maybe his magic touch will collapse or something. But it's a big, big project, and Angelina Jolie is perfect casting. So, you know, it could be interesting. It's going to be fun one way or the other.
Well, and it's written by Brian Helgeland, right? He's good. I think this is a huge mistake for her. She's already been cast as the Elizabeth Taylor type from stealing Brad Pitt from Jennifer Aniston. I find it really stupid that she's taking a role like this when it comes time to publicize it. That's all she's ever going to hear about. It's Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor.
Well, what about as a role in a movie? I mean, she hasn't made a lot of sort of epic-y things like this, and she hasn't made movies that have made a ton of money, really, in a way. This could really cement her superstar status, which she has, you know.
Like, she needs that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think she needs that.
Yes, but you look at her box office, it's not that big. She hasn't made a ton of big movies.
I'll tell you what's big on her.
Oh, you're
good
terrible.
Heavens.
Well, the Lara Croft movies didn't do too badly, did they?
And what about Wanted?
They did okay. The first one did okay.
A lot of her movies have done quite well.
Well, Michael, you kind of, I buried the lead and you helped me out there. Yes, Angelina Jolie is kind of locked in to play Cleopatra, but now Sony and Amy Pascal, the head of Sony, are after James Cameron. He needs no introduction. They want him to direct, and it's not certain that he will, but Scott Rudin is producing, and Amy Pascal wants him. Deadline is reporting this, and it was all over the place on Thursday and Friday that he's kind of on the short list. He's actually the only person they want, and it's now going to be shot in 3D.
It's interesting because,
of
course, because it's a spectacle. But what's interesting is he wants to be George Lucas, and he's got an Avatar book coming out at Christmas, and he's going to do two sequels at least. One of them is going to be set in the ocean world of Avatar. And you know, is he going to step away from that for like 2 or 3 years, which is what Cleopatra would mean, to focus on that? Or is he going to do both at the same time? It'd be fun to see.
Well, speaking of seeing things, did you guys watch any of the minor rescue, the Chilean minor rescue on television this week?
No.
It was.
I couldn't avoid it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. 8 million people on Tuesday night, as the Chilean miners who were stuck in a gold and copper mine in Chile, in a remote part of Chile, for 69 days, 8 million people tuned in the United States. Primetime numbers were huge, and After 11 p.m., the numbers grew even larger. 4 million people watching on CNN, 3.5 million on Fox News, and MSNBC had 1.1 million people. It was, you know, it was a very interesting, it was kind of like people kept comparing it to the moon landing, because you were watching this live, and they had a camera in the mine, like half a mile under the ground. They had a camera in the little cave that they were in for 69 days. It was pretty interesting.
It was a feel-good moment, for sure.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, there was a part of me that like wondered, like every time somebody new came up, it's like, oh my God, is this guy going to be dead? You know?
Oh, come on.
Well, and the fascinating thing is that CNN beat Fox on air after 11 p.m. They drew 4 million viewers. Fox had 3.5 million because that's the only time CNN wins when there's big breaking news. They're probably wondering how they can put more miners underground. But online, CBS drew a ton of people too. Even more people went to the CBS website. 5.5 million people were doing a live video stream of the miner rescue. So that's higher than they had in primetime or late night at their peak.
Well, you were saying that CNN wants to put a whole bunch of miners back underground so that they could boost their ratings. It looks like Spike TV had that idea. They're going to be doing a reality show called Coal. And this is from the producers of The Deadliest Catch, which is, of course, is the reality show about
Alaskan fishermen.
Yeah, Alaskan fishermen. I was going to say crab fishermen, which is more, and axemen, and the ice road truckers.
I like Ice Road Truckers. And Deadliest Catch is back at work. The guys have been holding out, but now they're all back on the job.
Yeah, and you know they've already ordered, I think, 6 episodes of the docuseries, as they're calling it, chronicling the dangerous profession of coal mining set in West Virginia. And I love the fact that they say, production is not expected to be easy. Yeah, that's kind of an understatement. You're going into a dark, underground place to shoot a television series. That in and of itself does not spell easy.
Well, my brother lives in Pennsylvania, and I've been to a coal, you know, they have working coal mines for tours, and it is literally the most dangerous. You just can't even imagine somebody doing that day after day, especially the way it was back 40, 50, 60, 80, 90 years ago. It's just an unbelievable, difficult job. So I'm not surprised that this is happening.
Moving on to other news, Barbara Billingsley. Do you want to take this story, Michael?
She's dead.
Excuse me, stewardess? I speak jive.
That's right. That's it. That was her last great role, Barbara Billingsley, in Airplane, the film spoof. She had that little moment where she said, I speak jive. And then she spoke jive with two black men who were being subtitled, which was very funny. And of course, she's best known for playing Mrs. Cleaver. Eddie Haskell won't be able to suck up to her anymore because she died over the weekend. I think she was 94 years old. She played her for 6 years on Leave It to Beaver. You know, that show ended in 1963, and it sort of proves how enduring and memorable TV characters can be. This happened before I was born. I think it finished airing before any of us were born, and yet we all know who she is, and it still struck a chord with us probably when you heard she died. Not it made you wildly sad, but you're like, oh, Mrs. Cleaver died. It's amazing how much TV becomes a part of your life, and I wonder if any of the shows that have debuted so far this fall will ever be anywhere near as, you know, memorable as Leave It to Beaver.
Well, why don't you go through some of them for us?
Well, we've got a lot of updates for the shows. First of all, creatively, the only new show I'm watching and enjoying is Raising Hope, the sitcom on Fox. What about you, Karen? Is there any new show that you're actually enjoying and watching?
Two that are majorly failing, Chase and The Whole Truth.
Yeah, The Whole Truth just got a little, you know, is just about dead, I'm afraid. So every network, I think, has some good story to tell, except for NBC. NBC is in the crapper, and there's no way what's-his-name can spin it. What's his name?
Steve Burke.
Zucker?
Yeah, I've already put him out of my mind, Jeff Zucker. Oh. There's no way he can, you know, spin, like, oh, there's something's turning around there. No, NBC is a disaster.
No, you suck.
Yeah, they missed Jay Leno at 10 o'clock. That's how bad they're doing.
Oh, oof.
So there are a bunch of new shows. CBS by far is doing the best. Hawaii Five-0. No, I should put this in context. I saw a news story saying that there are no hits from the fall TV season. I personally disagree because I think Blue Bloods, which is the Tom Selleck show on Friday night, that's like 11 million viewers. It's the top rated show of the night.
Seen that? I could not get past the first 15 minutes. I was so bored.
It's for older people. The average audience member is 60 years old, I believe. But you know what? They buy stuff too. I've always thought.
Well, and they were fans of Magnum P.I.
And they were fans of Magnum P.I. Yeah, Blue Bloods is a hit. Hawaii Five-0 is a hit.
I can't watch that either. I find it unwatchable. It's awful. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's not very good. Mike and Molly is doing fine. That's a sitcom about fat people, which literally every other joke is about how they're fat. I find that exhausting. Bleep, My Dad Says, with William Shatner, is doing okay. And even The Defenders, which was looking a little iffy, that's the law show starring Jerry O'Connell and Jim Belushi, that perked up last week. So that's doing okay and stabilizing and could be all right. So CBS is, you know, batting 5 for 5, and every move they made worked out. They moved The Big Bang Theory to Thursday. That's a huge success. They moved CSI Miami. That was a big success in its new slot. I mean, everything they've done is working out like a charm.
What about ABC?
ABC, their superhero show No Ordinary Family has been dropping every week. Detroit 187 is free falling. Better With You is falling. The Whole Truth, Karen's show, is just about dead. My Generation has been canceled, and the Dana Delaney medical show hasn't debuted yet, so we don't know about that.
That's Fox body of proof.
Yeah, that's body of proof. Fox is 0 for 3. Lone Star has been canceled. Raising Hope, I like, but it's not doing great, but they have ordered the back nine for it. And Running Wild.
Yeah, that'll survive.
Yeah, it's a funny show.
It's a funny show.
It's really sweet, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I keep trying to push people to see it. I'm mentioning it on Facebook, doing whatever I can for it. In the old days, I would have written a story about it for some newspaper or magazine, but those days are gone. Nobody wants to write it, you know, unless the guy was, you know, arrested for heroin use. Nobody wants to talk about
it. Well, now, what is the show about? You should mention what the show is about real quick.
Raising Hope is about a young guy, white trash family, sort of like My Name is Earl. His mom had him really young.
Martha Plimpton, one of the most talented actresses out there.
Yes, she's great. And Cloris Leachman is Mom Ball, the great-grandmother figure. And this guy, his first girlfriend was this psychotic serial killer woman, and she seduced him. They had sex. She had a baby in jail. She's dead. He's got the baby. It's like
they're just like this white trash family. Like, it's just,
yeah, they're totally
horrible. White. It's horrible, and it's so funny.
It's very funny, very sweet, and he likes the girl at the local grocery store, and it's just a really funny, cute show, and very solid, great cast of characters. The dad is from Deadwood. And the lead hero is sweet, and it's just it's a really sweet, fun show. And right after that is Running Wild, which is from the creator of Arrested Development, and it's just terrible. And then the CW is not doing well, but their standards are so low it doesn't really matter. They have Hellcats and Nikita. Neither one's doing that well, but I don't know if they'll even notice since their best show is doing about 3 million viewers. And NBC is a disaster in every possible way. The Event is falling every week. Chase is free-falling, waiting to be canceled. Undercovers is free falling. Outsourced is falling. Outlaw has been canceled. School Pride is a reality show that debuted on Friday night. It's pathetic. I mean, it's like a basic cable show on the Learning Channel.
I don't understand why that. How did that make the air?
Because that's how desperate they are. I couldn't believe it. It looks like something that would be on the Learning Channel at 5 p.m. It is so mundane.
Cheryl Hines? I mean, God bless her, but I mean, Cheryl Hines?
It reached 2.9 million viewers on Friday. It's a disaster. The only possible hit, and a modest one at that, is Law & Order Los Angeles, and that basically replaces Law & Order, so it's a zero-sum game. They haven't really gained anything there.
Now, what about all of these shows that got moved? I know there was The Big Bang Theory, and I think CSI Miami got moved. Yeah. How are they?
All of the moves have proved to be good moves.
Absolutely.
Right?
Glee did really well, is doing really well anchoring Tuesday, even though the sitcoms following it are not doing great. But it's growing, and you know it's obviously a key show for them. And Fox, of course, waits for the spring when American Idol arrives. The Big Bang Theory is doing great on Thursday, and that's anchoring, you know, Bleep, My Dad Says. Other shows, CSI Miami on Sunday is doing well. The CW moved Smallville and Supernatural to Friday. Smallville just had its 200th episode. That's clearly this is the final season, but they're both doing pretty well by CW standards. ABC and Fox can't even be bothered to put shows on Friday night. They can barely tell us a week in advance what they're going to air. And NBC obviously is doing terrible on Friday. CBS is the only network programming new shows on Friday of any note. And Saturday night, nobody is airing anything. So there are basically two nights of the week where most networks turn out the lights, which I don't understand. And NBC is doing so bad.
Fantasy Island and Love Boat were on Saturday nights.
And Golden Girls and Miami Vice on Miami Vice.
Hunter.
Dallas and Falcon Crest were on Fridays.
Friday nights
the
along
best.
With Miami Vice. Yeah, and today when people...
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, and today when people DVR shows... idea that they say, oh, people go out on Saturday night, they don't want to watch TV. It's so ridiculous. It doesn't matter when the show airs. I'm just going to tape it and watch it later anyway.
Yeah, so, I'll probably watch it on Friday night if I don't have plans, which is most Friday nights. I watch all my shows at DVR.
Exactly. So why they're basically, you've got beachfront property and they're building up 70% of their beachfront property and leaving 30% empty. They're not even trying to build on there. And that, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. I think it's crazy. But NBC could not be doing worse. Parenthood just hit a series low. The Jay Leno show was doing better probably than most of the shows most nights, Monday through Friday. I mean, that's how bad they are. So they literally have nowhere to build. No wonder The Office is being renewed for another season. It's all they have.
Well, you know, you talk about why aren't they programming Friday and Saturday nights. I ask myself, why is the California DMV closed on Fridays and Saturdays now? But it's all budgetary. They don't want to spend a lot of money.
There are furloughs. They have to.
Yeah. Well, that's the California.
But the library is closed every Friday now too.
Yeah. So
right, and that's incredibly short-sighted because, you know, the library is what the government should be funding, especially in a recession, because it's a cheap and inexpensive way and gives people access to books.
Yeah, but California, don't even get me started.
Yeah,
I mean,
we don't want to walk down that road.
We're so screwed. We're so screwed with our budget.
Well, we're talking about shows that are on the air now. There are some shows that are in the works for future seasons, including Marvel and ABC, both owned by Disney, so it's no coincidence. The Incredible Hulk is going to be coming back to television. Maybe he can date the Wonder Woman.
Oh, awesome.
She's coming back as well. But guess when The Incredible Hulk debuted? It debuted in March of 1978 on CBS. When? Friday night.
Oh.
And it was a big hit for them.
And I totally watched it with my brother.
Yeah, I watched it too. Bill Bixby was great. I thought, wow, this is serious drama. And then the Hulk was
It was scary.
But, you know, this is all part of Marvel's realignment. The Marvel Comics finally pulled back the rights to a lot of their stuff. And they funded themselves, and they've got a new head of television, a guy at Marvel focused solely on TV, and their desire is to launch The Incredible Hulk and Wonder Woman and not try and do 10 million different things, but do those two shows, do them as well as they possibly can, and then move on from there and try and, you know, use their properties wisely. Because for years, Marvel was moribund or just squandering their properties with straight-to-DVD superhero movies, all these junk. And they really want to rebrand themselves like they've done with movies and do it again on TV. And obviously there's an appetite for it.
Well, would you watch an animated version of Napoleon Dynamite? Because Fox is turning that hit indie film into an animated series, which sounds kind of interesting.
I couldn't even get through the real Napoleon Dynamite. I thought it was awful.
That was the first time I felt old. With that movie, I literally avoided telling people I didn't like it because everybody who was like 20 and younger loved it.
Yeah, they were like, it speaks to my generation. And I'm like, I could not get through the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and if I said I didn't like it, they were just like, what? You're a loser.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's the same voices as the film. A lot of the same actors, like including John Hader as the title character. They ordered 6 episodes. It's going to be animated. And it looks sort of like King of the Hill, frankly, the animation, or maybe Beavis and Butthead, which also is coming back. So it'll be interesting to see how it works.
Speaking of interesting to see how it works, Ashton Kutcher has sold yet another blog to CBS. And this time...
What was the first one?
He sold Don't Tell Steve. And that was a Twitter account. And this is another Twitter account. So it's not really a blog. He's selling these...
Oh, I thought this was... Don't Tell Steve.
No. It turns out that his Catalyst production company and the Shift company, based on the blog and Twitter feed, Dear Girls Above Me, and it is written by a guy who's driven to distraction by the ditzy roommates living in the condo above him. By the way, Karen, are you on the second or first floor where you live?
I'm on the second floor.
Whoa!
Do you know who lives below you?
That would be Joe and Greg. Joe, he who almost burned down the apartment complex last weekend.
Sounds like
and,
a plot.
And yeah, they are probably writing about my sister and I. Excellent. God damn it.
Why don't you?
I'm famous. I'm famous.
Well, I don't know. This is a totally unconnected development, but we are now launching a new Twitter account called Two Guys, a Girl, and a Podcast. So hopefully people will be interested in that and follow us. And who knows where it may lead? Maybe a Broadway musical.
That's awesome. We totally should do that.
Well, some of the samples from Dear Girls Above Me's Twitter feed are, and in quotes, he said he was Spanish, but not a Mexican. What the hell? That doesn't even make sense. It does to the entire country of Spain.
I don't know. How is that going to be a sitcom?
Here's another one. I want a guy who's going to meet me halfway, like the Black Eyed Peas song. I want a girl who doesn't quote the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, Michael loves that one. I can see these as web shorts. I don't see how they would translate.
It's the flip side of the Big Bang Theory. It's a guy moving into a building with ditzy people next door rather than smart people.
Well, who knows? The Shatner series, which was based on a Twitter feed, Bleep My Dad Says, that seems to be doing okay, so we'll keep our eye on this one.
Yeah, but the reviews are terrible. It's a bad show.
Let's flip on over to music and talk about the American Music Awards. Eminem and Lady Antebellum both received 5 nominations. The nominations were announced this past Tuesday. The award ceremony will be held November 21st and broadcast live, at least in the on the East Coast, on ABC, not NBC. And Bon Jovi, Pink, and Usher will be performing. But what I found interesting about this story is that the nominees were not drawn, as they usually are, from Billboard's Top 100 charts, but instead Big Champagne's Ultimate Charts. And the Ultimate Chart is a ranked list of the most popular artists and songs based on a weighted combination of music sales, radio, TV broadcast, internet streaming, and video viewing, while incorporating online metrics such as activity on social networks. So it looks like Billboard is kind of losing its touch when it comes to this kind of these kinds of award shows.
Well, it's an interesting choice. It's certainly the wave of the future, and Billboard's Hot 100 keeps incorporating and changing the formula by which it determines who's, you know, number one on the charts. A combination of used to be just radio play and then weighted with sales, and they always work on the formula, and of course they include digital sales and I think now ringtones to a degree, but I'm not sure about that. But the Ultimate Chart, when you look at it week to week, is very similar right now to Billboard. But obviously, it makes sense to look at all that different stuff. I wish it were more different and revealing things that I didn't expect, like saying, oh my God, you know, this country artist is much bigger than I thought. But right now, it's sort of shadowing the Billboard Hot 100. But yeah, it's definitely a little blow to Billboard to have Dick Clark say, this is the way to go.
Well, Big Champagne got to start tracking downloads on peer-to-peer networks. And speaking of networks, Twitter is the way you could have last week found out about the title of the Justin Bieber concert film, which is Never Say Never. So, Karen, I thought you'd really appreciate this story. On Wednesday, Paramount and director John Chu put Bieber fans on a Twitter scavenger hunt. And for those willing, people had to follow Justin Bieber and Chu throughout the day and wait for a piece-by-piece unveiling of the movie poster and official title.
It's clever.
Yeah. How did it work? Did they have to figure out a clue or go to a new Twitter account every time? Or
no, you just had to follow them, and they kind of sent you twit pics of
that's cute though.
Pieces, yeah. Well, since
the smart use of media, and it, you know, resonates with his fans, obviously.
Did you guys read in Entertainment Weekly that Justin Bieber is coming out with a line of nail polish?
He's coming out.
Yes, I did read about
he's
that.
Coming out, yeah. Period. He's also coming out with a line of nail polish.
Yes, I did see that, which is insane because he's not even like an emo kid who wears nail polish. So what's the point of that?
Wait, we shouldn't out people. And this is, of course, segue into the digital media section.
Yes, very nice. Very nice, Karen. Now you're
well done. Well
yeah,
done.
Well thanks.
Done. Well, why don't you fill us in on what Perez Hilton is promising these days?
Perez Hilton, he of PerezHilton.com, the gossip monger who has been well known for bullying people and doing such things as outing people, has decided that he is going to stop doing that. And he is going to instead be, what did he say? Sassy? Just report the news. And so he went onto Ellen DeGeneres' show, onto Ellen, and said that he was going to do this. And she, I thought this was really interesting. She was pretty serious about this and she didn't seem to believe him at all. She clearly didn't seem to like him, in my opinion.
Does anybody like him?
You know, it's funny. He's one of those weird celebrities. So, like, you do see him at, like, gay rallies and things with celebrities that you kind of respect. And please don't ask me to name any of them because I can't remember. But I remember, like, I'll see pictures of him with celebrities that are, you know, sort of serious celebrities. And you'll be like, what? What's he doing with them?
Well, he told Ellen DeGeneres, I'm going to do things differently on my website than I have in the past. What, he's going to actually write decently? Probably not. I'm not going to call people nasty nicknames. I'm not going to go the mean route. I'm going to force myself to try and be funnier or smarter or just do things differently, not doodle inappropriate things, not quote-unquote out people. Well, then should we start the death watch for PerezHilton.com?
No, because this guy's proven himself to be extremely savvy. This website was popular starting about 5 or 6 years ago, And I could never read it because I hate it. It was so hateful that I just couldn't. But, I mean, look, we all know who he is. He's got a TV show. He's got something else coming out. He rides every bandwagon. Like, if whatever the latest meme is, he is on it. And I kind of grudgingly respect him for that. And I think that he's, even though I still can't stand him, I think he is sincere in this.
Well, I think Ellen's perhaps cynicism about it is related to the fact that it's sort of the media firestorm right now. Universal has a film called The Dilemma opening in January in which Vince Vaughn makes a gay joke in the trailer. And they've gotten a ton of flack for that. And they've removed the phrase from the trailer. People are associating them in the studio with bullying and gay kids committing suicide. They're like, oh, my God, we're just trying to release a comedy. Well, there's changing mores, you know, using gay as an insult maybe isn't so cool anymore. So I agree that 6 months ago, that same joke in that same trailer would not have raised an eyebrow. But right now, people are very sensitive to it. Anderson Cooper criticized it, not by name even. He was very discreet, but he was clearly referencing that film. And that created a huge firestorm. And Universal and GLAAD both sort of got some mud on their face by how they dealt with it. But now it's gone from the trailer, or I should say they've released a new trailer without that. And they're still arguing with people about whether they should take it out of the film itself.
So you're saying it was a big whoop, but it turned into a big deal.
Exactly.
Segue.
Yes. That is our segue into Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the week's top entertainment news stories and whether they are a big deal or if anyone should care about them. Our first story this week is about Howard Stern. Just as Howard Stern threatens to leave satellite radio, Titan Sirius XM is poised to hit 20 million in subscribers. They've got a record high 19.8 million people subscribed as of the third quarter and have added more than 1 million subscribers this year, as opposed to losing almost 500,000 last year when the recession was at its peak. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Big whoop.
Michael.
It would have been a bigger deal a few years ago when satellite radio is a bigger deal.
Well, but that's the point. It is a bigger deal than ever because they have more subscribers than ever. I think it's a big deal.
That satellite TV became a big deal was a bigger deal 2 years ago than I think it is now.
Satellite
radio.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal because it shows they're a mature industry, still adding people via, you know, satellite radios in cars and other ways. And I don't think Howard Stern's going to leave.
Will Taylor Swift be the next big star to have her songs featured on the TV show Glee? Swift confirmed there are ongoing talks and she might even appear. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop? Or is the real big deal the fact that Swift's third album comes out October 25th and her first single, Mine, has already sold 1 million digital downloads?
Exactly. Pop stars on Glee is not a big deal anymore, but Swift's new album is. She's had two singles debut in the top 10 already. The first one's already sold 1 million copies. The second one is on fire as well. Music needs a big seller, and Taylor Swift might just be the one to do it, and that makes her a big deal.
Karen.
Big whoop. Glee has become such a horror for stars. It's disgusting, and I always think that these themed episodes are always the worst, too, except maybe the Madonna one.
Well, you know, the Gorillaz said, Glee, you cannot use our music. Not that I could see them actually. I don't know how you would sing a Gorillaz song. I mean, just they're so produced and electronic that.
I think a bigger deal. See what you have here in the notes about Mark Salling. I think it's fascinating. He was essentially fired.
Well, I don't know that he was fired. He just was not on last week's episode.
He's going to be gone for 6 episodes because he says he wants to travel with his band, which sounds like a bunch of BS to me.
Right. He's kind of been suspended.
Yeah, he got suspended.
And he plays the character Puck, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of conflicting stuff online. The first wave of news said, oh, he's been pushing for his career too much and they're mad at him. And so they sat him down for an episode. Then the next thing I saw online was people saying, no, we're connected to the show. He's done everything with their approval. He hasn't tried to go behind their backs or anything. Everybody's gotten approval every step of the way. And he's just taking the time to do this. So who knows? But it was definitely awkward. Suddenly he is just not on the show like last week. And you're like, huh?
Yeah, I was like, what happened?
I thought he was sick or something, had the flu. But it turns out something's up. So, you know, why would you take off 6 weeks in the middle of a series? So clearly, I think you're right, Karen. We probably don't know the whole story yet.
Yeah. By the way, I want to change my name to Cord Overstreet. You guys don't mind, do you?
That's the best name ever. He's the new cast member on Glee, and they made him take off his shirt every single episode. I hope it keeps on. He's been in the shower. He's been in the locker room. They're like, kid, you're going to have your shirt off again this week. Trust me. Stay in shape.
I have a secret, Michael. I dye my hair.
That was the best episode of the season so far.
Yeah, it was. Okay, sorry, Sperling. Moving on.
What the heck are you talking about? Well, the idea takes our breath away, but apparently Paramount is tempting producer Jerry Bruckheimer and director Tony Scott with the idea of making a sequel to Top Gun. A new young hotshot would be the lead, but Tom Cruise would pop up as Maverick, of course, the character he played in the original in 1910. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Okay, I know that I should say this is a big whoop, but I'm sorry. This is a big deal. I would totally see this movie.
I'll say it's a big whoop because the very reason you say yet, if they cast Taylor Lautner in it, it'll be a big deal.
Could they put in Cord Overstreet?
Absolutely. He could be my wingman.
You'd be a great goose. Michael, I dye my hair.
And title.
Okay, go on. Sorry. Getting loopy. Okay, go.
Geeks rejoice, Johnny Galecki.
Oh, sorry.
I knew you were going to do that.
One fascinating thing in the Hollywood Reporter item about this was that they referred to Top Gun as a cult classic. What?
Cult?
Cult classic. They really got to be careful.
Pop classic. What are you talking about?
Well, but cult. Come on.
Yeah, cult. Only if you're the entire world, that cult.
Exactly.
Okay. Geeks rejoice, Johnny Galecki just landed his first big movie role since The Big Bang Theory took off. The actor takes a supporting part in the new sci-fi film by Andrew Niccol, the director of Gattaca, and also the writer of The Truman Show. It stars Justin Timberlake, and Galecki plays his alcoholic best friend. Somewhere, Emmy winner Jim Parsons is saying, "Well, I'm starring in a comedy about competitive birdwatching with Steve Martin and Angelica Houston. Why didn't you write an item about that?" So, Jim Parsons aside, Karen, is Galecki's shot at a movie credibility a big deal or a big whoop?
You know how I feel. Big whoop. Man gets job.
You've convinced me. Big whoop.
Well, what about The Hollywood Reporter? Its website has a new look in the ongoing project of revamping and rebranding The Hollywood Reporter. The website has an all-new design with blogs and video prominent on the front page and the overall feel much more, well, bloggy than, say, an imitation of a magazine layout, the way the previous site worked. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's always a big deal. It's a nice, fresh look for them. And since they're trying to reach a much broader audience, I think it was a good idea.
Karen?
Yeah, I agree. Big deal. It shows that they are moving into the future, that they understand that the future is here and has been for quite a while. Plus, I love the word bloggy.
Ironically, the same week that they launched this site, they let Andy Wallenstein go, the head of their website. So their Ouch. Digital editor, yeah. Which we discussed on last week's episode, so I won't go into it here. In any case, it's Spielberg versus Spielberg for the holidays in 2011. On a morning conference call, Stacy Snyder, the DreamWorks chief executive, told reporters on Wednesday that War Horse, directed by Mr. Spielberg, was being moved by DreamWorks and Disney to a release date of December 28, 2011. That puts it on track for a release just 5 days after Paramount Pictures is scheduled to release The Adventures of Tintin, Secret of the Unicorn, also directed by Mr. Spielberg. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Big whoop.
Michael?
Film gets new release date.
Okay. But the two movies by the same director, that's the issue. And a big, big director, obviously.
And so is it a big deal, Michael?
Oh, I was giving Karen a chance to rethink it.
I'm not rethinking it.
Oh, okay. I'm wondering if War Horse, which I saw in the West End, the play version of this, I'm wondering if that's a limited release because it's December 28th. I'm not sure how it falls on the schedule, but I assume that must be a limited release and they'll be platforming it out with Oscar consideration, in which case it's a big whoop. If they're going wide 5 days later after Tintin, which has the same sort of family audience, then it's a big deal.
Do you really want to hurt me, Karen and Michael? Then tell me you're...
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Well, okay. Fair enough. Then tell me you're not excited about the reunion of Culture Club. Boy George has confirmed the band will reunite in 2012 to mark the 30th anniversary of their single White Boy. No word yet on whether it's just a concert or tour or whether they'll be recording new music. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Big whoop. Sounds like somebody needs money.
Michael.
No, it's a big deal. Boy George has a top 10 dance hit in the U.S. right now, and every time Culture Club and Boy George has success, I can throw it into my sister's face because my sister in London, when Culture Club was just breaking big, was like, oh my God, what a flash in the pan. We'll never hear from them again. I go, you know nothing about music. And B, no, he's very talented. He writes all his own songs. He's going to be around for many years to come. And
I'm not denying that.
No. And my sister and I made a bet at that time in 1984 about Culture Club. And every 5 years, I get to throw it in her face about how completely wrong she was, because we're still talking about Boy George 30 years later. So it makes me very happy.
Okay, never mind. I changed my big deal. That's definitely a big deal. I changed my mind.
When you say Dr. Oz, that usually refers to Oprah's protege. Now it can also refer to Ozzy Osbourne. Yes, Rolling Stone has a new health columnist, and his name is Ozzy. I guess if your health issues revolve around all the terrible things you've done to your body and yet survived, he's your man. Or, say you've swallowed a bat, he's your man. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop.
Karen?
Big whoop. Man gets job, but wow, what in the hell?
Well, maybe he's got a good agent.
Well, you know, when I was looking at the new Hollywood Reporter, it made me look at Billboard and Rolling Stone. Billboard, you go to the front page of Billboard magazine, which was an industry leader and clearly not reaching out to a wide audience, you wouldn't think. But their front page is like top 20 tweets of the day, some rock stars, 5 favorite comic book superheroes, video, blog. It's just, it's not about the news and about the industry. It's this sort of random desperation to try and reach a broad audience. And I think this is sort of indicative of that. I mean, Ozzy Osbourne doing a health column, it's ridiculous. But they're all just paranoid. They don't know what to do.
Sperling, you were making a segue into our anti-baseball.
Yes. That was my poor segue, I guess, since Michael, I guess, didn't.
Maybe he has a good agent who's probably not at APA.
Right, exactly. Well,
ouch.
And that is time for our weekly segment, Inside Baseball, where we discuss only the stories that Hollywood might care about. And this is a story that was in Deadline about the APA retreat. And APA is, I guess, what is it? I don't know what it stands for, but it's
Agency for the Performing Arts.
Okay, well, thank you very much. They are a kind of a boutique agency and have always been known as a boutique agency here in Los Angeles. They may have a New York office, but...
And by boutique agency, we mean sort of hovering between B-level and C-level?
Well, oh...
No, they could have big clients, but they don't have a lot of them.
Right, precisely. I mean, they can have... Yeah, but that's actually a very good way of putting it, Michael. And they had a retreat recently at the St. Regis in Dana Point, California. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but boy, is that one hell of a...
Wow.
what?
Makes me want to become an agent at APA.
Well, yes, but then you'd have to sit through this 1 minute and horrible video.
What was that?
I don't know. They produced some video to show their...
It's a TV commercial that they repurposed. It's a TV ad that they just slapped new logos on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's an ad for Audi that they just jokingly put in names. Instead of people referring to other cars, they ended up making it look like they were referring to other talent agencies. It's a silly ad where a kid is looking longingly at a car, and they say that the only reason you like them is because of the advertising. And so they show people looking at these different cars, but when they finally see the Audi, they're like, oh my God, that's the real deal. So in this case, they had people saying, well, they say gray is the new beige, and they're thinking about cars, but then they'll flash up CAA on the screen to make it look like the people are talking about CAA and all their competitors. It was just a silly use of an old ad.
Right, and I guess somehow an email that was sent out...
Somebody contacted Nikki Fink.
Yeah, and it...
Somebody who was there, so we're going to assume that it was an agent, said, I just came back from the retreat, and essentially just he drank the Kool-Aid and was drunk enough to send this to Nikki Fink.
No, actually, it was an email being sent out to all of the people at APA that was then forwarded to Nikki
Fink. Oh, really? And that
was
forwarded to her?
Yes, and it reads, in nearly every field that we are involved in, our clients are at the pinnacle of their profession. From Ron White, who? Craig Ferguson and Lewis Black in comedy, to the Kardashians, Kendra Wilkinson, and Bethany Frankel in branded lifestyle.
Which he misspelled.
Yeah. to representing Time Inc., Reader's Digest, and other magazines that may be going out of business. Okay, that part I added. And Sky Spirits in corporate consulting, to having Billy Gardell starring in Mike and Molly, and Halt McCallany starring in Lights Out. Not to mention having Corey Monteith. Who are these people? Starring in Glee. Plus, we have 30 reality shows on the air that we have either packaged or sold. Several scripted package series on the air, including Sanctuary and The Gates, with 60-plus scripted pilots in development. We are major. Unless you're talking about, like, major as in major, sergeant, corporal, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I don't know half these
Somebody
people.
In the comments, too, was like, did they pay Audi a licensing fee? Because I'm thinking the exact same thing.
Well, that was me, because in the ad, it's an Audi ad. So I wondered if they...
Oh, was that was your comment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That was awesome.
And they also have a line where they say, we're growing faster than CAA and all the others. It's like, well, yeah, that, you know what? My blog is growing faster than Huffington Post, because I just went from one reader to three readers. And yeah. So I'm growing by, you know,
exactly.
It's growing faster is always the loosest of possible, you know, how big are you is what you want to know.
Well, and I should say that they did not say they were growing faster than CAA. They said everybody but CAA was not on that list. And CAA is the largest talent agency
in the
world.
They mentioned CAA in their ad, absolutely.
Yes,
I saw
in their ad they did, but that line about who they were growing faster
than.
Well,
there's no way CAA is growing fast. They can't. So they have to, if they're growing at all, they're growing faster than CAA, because CAA is too big to grow.
Yeah, they have everybody. So.
Yeah. Well, Cory Monteith, of course, is the star, is Finn on Glee, and Craig Ferguson is my favorite late night stand-up comic. So they have some good talent, but it's a little self-aggrandized and a little silly. But looking at Nikki Fink's column, she says a top 10% or sent it into her. So, you know, that's whether this guy just forwarded an email that was being sent around, she says a top guy at APA sent it to her.
To her, right? Yeah.
Okay, well.
They're proud of themselves. Good for them. Do you guys think it's embarrassing or stupid?
Oh, they look ridiculous.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they look ridiculous on so many levels. First of all, the video itself is just...
lame.
It's amateur. It's lame. It's, if I was Audi, I'd sue them. But then the email, I mean, wow, what kind of Kool-Aid are you drinking, buddy? That is just frightening. I'm actually looking at this right now, and... Nikki Fink says that somebody there sent in this email and video, so it's actually kind of unclear whether it was sent to her or whether it was sent in to the agency or what. But yeah, no, it just makes APA look really, really foolish.
Well, we hope you're drinking our Kool-Aid, and if you are, you can go to iTunes or the Zune Marketplace or your RSS reader and subscribe to our podcast. You can find all of those links, as well as links to all of our social networking accounts like YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. You can find those on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's also where you'll find ways to contact us. You can email us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com is the address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on MySpace or on their website, whoismgmt.com. Karen can be found on her website, karenwoodwardonline.com, or on Twitter, @Karen_Woodward is the username to look up. Michael Giltz can be found on Twitter, although not Michael Glitz, so just Michael Giltz.
That's his alter ego.
Right. Michael Giltz's username is pretty simple. It's @MichaelGiltz. That's also his website, michaelgiltz.com. Some of my writing can be found on celluloidjunkie.com, and my username on Twitter is @Sperling. Until next week, play nice.